Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to present HealthBeat, a spotlight on healthcare in the Lehigh Valley, produced in conjunction with the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation.
Good evening and welcome to HealthBeat, a program that examines how we as a community can create a healthier Lehigh Valley. I'm Greg Caponia, along with Edward Meehan, the Executive Director of the Ryder Poole Foundation. Hi, Edward.
Hello, Greg. Always good to be with you.
Thank you, sir. Today, we're pleased to welcome Adrian Shanker, the founder and director of the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center in Allentown, serving also the Lehigh Valley. Welcome, Adrian.
So great to be here with you today.
Today, we're going to discuss the needs assessment report of the LGBTQ health community. Adrian, the first sentence, this is interesting. The first sentence of the 200-page document states, LGBTQ communities have not been counted in large data systems. Why would that be?
Historically, many data sets, federal and state data sets in particular, have left out LGBT people. They haven't counted demographic data that measures sexual orientation and gender identity. And when that happens, we end up being excluded as LGBT people from knowing how certain health conditions or health situations affect our lives. When they don't count us, we don't count. So Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center started to partner with Pennsylvania Department of Health in 2015, and we've continued biannually since then to comprehensively measure LGBT health disparities throughout Pennsylvania to understand what are the barriers to care and what are the chronic challenges for LGBT people that achieve the unmet dream of health equity.
He said something interesting. When they don't count us, we don't count. Is that prevalent in other diverse communities?
I think that for all minoritized communities, the importance of being counted is necessary. The one difference for the LGBT community is that the CDC doesn't mandate demographic data collection related to sexual orientation and gender identity. So advocates like us have to continuously fight to be included even in basic surveys.
Edward, how does Ryder Poole emphasize these diverse communities and try to get them counted? Because I know you're very active in this.
Well, I think there's a couple of pieces to it that Adrian has already touched on. One is that if you, say, for example, look at the health of the Lehigh Valley overall, you'd say, that's a pretty healthy place. Things look pretty good. It is not until you look at where you can find the disparities, usually in communities that have been marginalized, or communities that have not been counted adequately or represented adequately, where you see the health disparity that's very glaring. So it's important to make sure that if you're thinking about improving the health of the entire Lehigh Valley, you have to go out of your way to think about the communities that are most at risk, most marginalized, most disenfranchised.
On one of our last programs, we had Dr. Brian Nestor from LVHN talk about data and how they are now using data to better predict the social determinants of health. Adrian, do you see some of that data? Are you able to look at more data and put your emphasis on areas that need to be worked on?
Yeah, so the needs assessment is called the Pennsylvania LGBT Health Needs Assessment, and our most recent version is 2020. And again, it's administered by Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center in partnership with the Pennsylvania Department of Health. And I should just say it's a statewide survey, not only Lehigh Valley. However, we have very strong Lehigh Valley response rate. We measure social determinants of health as well as access to care and also specific health challenges. So, for example, some of the social determinants of health that we're looking at are housing security, food security, experiences with discrimination, and experiences with violence as indicators of other broader health challenges. So we're looking at, for example, the healthy eating active living rate in the LGBT community, and we're also looking at instances of food insecurity and housing security that might lead to that. We also look at transportation as a barrier to care because we know that for rural queer communities, especially for trans people, rural communities experience a major issue where there's often not a provider of, for example, trans-focused mental health care in an entire county. And Pennsylvania's telehealth law does not allow coverage across county lines, which is arbitrary and ridiculous. And so we see transportation as a significant barrier to care as well. So we do look at the social determinants of health to then compare and help to tell a fuller story around the health challenges that we identify that the LGBT community experiences, which is almost every health challenge that you could imagine.
If I can jump in for a second,
please.
I've read the study, read it a couple of times
now,
and it's very well done. It is, as Adrian said, statewide, and you know the sample size is significant. It's an important study. It does a good job of documenting the data, and I think you know one of the things, Greg, you and I have talked about is something that we say at Poole Healthcare Trust, which is no data without the story and no story without the data.
Right.
So the data is helpful, the data is instructive, and then locally the qualitative aspect of talking with people in their lives to more enrich and better understand the data is important and helpful as well. So, I mean, it's a serious study. It's well, very well done. And Adrian, in particular, I compliment you and the work in terms of framing the recommendations and the assessment of the health needs focused on the social determinants of health. And we've talked about that with the radio audience here in the past about how if you're going to improve health, that you really need to think about the things in people's lives that impact whether they are healthy or not. And it takes you a little bit away from traditional healthcare and more towards the things like you're talking about, transportation, housing, food, education. This study is important in its findings, but I think it's also very, very helpful in terms of framing a go-forward to say, how do we think about these broader social determinants?
It was interesting that when I read the study, the broader social determinants are not the ones that I would have thought of for the LGBTQ community. And Adrian, interesting that you said housing. Right out of the gate, you said housing. Help our listeners understand why housing ranks so high.
Well, the Fair Housing Act doesn't include protections for LGBTQ people. So experiences with housing discrimination are core to LGBTQ people's lived existence in America and here in Pennsylvania. There, we have municipal protections in, for example, Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton, Reading, and Stroudsburg. But throughout the rest of the greater Lehigh Valley, there are no fair housing protections for LGBTQ people. So this is top of mind. What's more, 40% of homeless youth are LGBTQ. They're not homeless because of the reasons that many other populations are homeless. And to be sure, nobody should be homeless. Housing is a human right. However, LGBTQ youth are homeless because of family rejection for the most part. And so there are unique challenges that impact LGBTQ people's lived experiences. And that's why we see housing as a core social determinant of one's health when it comes to LGBTQ people's health. So, for example, if somebody is housing insecure, it's hard to expect that they might prioritize preventative screenings when their basic needs aren't yet met. And so we're trying to work hard to ensure that we can remove as many barriers to care as possible to help people receive those preventative screenings. Part of that includes clinical changes, but a lot of it requires policy changes in Pennsylvania and the country. One policy change, just as an example, related to housing as a social determinant of health, is that Congress can pass legislation that would end legal housing discrimination against LGBTQ people. And actually, this is an issue coming up very soon this year in Congress. So there is a policy solution to this, and it has not yet happened, but that would be one policy remedy to this issue.
Edward, what should we do as a community to encourage our legislators to get on board with this type of legislation?
I think there are policy issues, there are legislative issues, there are community-based issues, there are health service delivery issues. I think a lot of our work increasingly thinking about social determinants is framed on, you know, the totality. Frequently we think about housing in a silo, education in a silo, employment in a silo, as opposed to understanding them as being interactive. So I think part of it is continuing to have good, hard data, informative data that can inform the conversation, that provides an empirical picture. And the other is depict the interactive effects of social determinants in a way that tells a good story. So I think there are multiple ways that we can go at it. Well, the multiple ways we can go at it, there's multiple ways we have to go at it. Starting with the initial premise that, as Dr. Nestor said on the last radio show, we're only as healthy as the least healthy segment of the community. And so if we're really going to improve the health of the entire Lehigh Valley, we have to start to focus on the folks who are most at risk or most disparate in health outcomes.
Adrian, transportation. Help me draw the connection between your community and transportation.
Okay, so we have 67 counties in Pennsylvania, and some are quite rural. First, I should just say that LGBT care is not a specialty. LGBT health care is primary care. Transgender health care is primary care. Every clinician that provides care for humans is providing care for LGBTQ humans. And also, there are specific LGBT health needs that do require certain types of specialists. For example, an endocrinologist that has some specialty in working with the trans patient population, or infectious disease specialists who have specialty in working with HIV-positive individuals. So there are entire counties in Pennsylvania where some of those providers don't exist in those counties. And people need to travel in normal time, 1, 2, sometimes even 3 hours to receive care. For example, there's only 3 surgeons for lower surgery for transgender people in Pennsylvania, only 3 in the entire state. So we have huge geographic distances for people to reach certain types of providers. Before COVID, people would drive if they had the ability to do so, and geography was a barrier to care in that way. We thought that with COVID, that Pennsylvania's telehealth expansion might help to remedy some of this issue. However, we have an arbitrary and unnecessary county restriction where Pennsylvania's insurance coverage for telehealth statewide will not cover across county lines. So if the provider is in a different county than the resident, it's not covered by insurance under Pennsylvania's telehealth expansion. It's unnecessary, and it's especially harmful for LGBTQ people, especially those in rural communities. So that's just an example of transportation as a barrier to care. One other example is that in our more urban communities, the lack of high-quality public transportation can mean that in the Lehigh Valley, it can take 2 hours to take a bus from Easton to Allentown. So if they're, you know, even if we have a provider in the next county, if somebody's relying on public transit that is, you know, inefficient or unworkable to meet their health care needs, that is also a transportation-based barrier to care.
One of the things that really stuck out in the report was that the LGBTQ community does not identify to their healthcare provider. Therefore, they have a tendency to maybe not go see a healthcare provider. Is that right?
Many LGBTQ people have had negative past experiences with healthcare providers that lead us to have a sense of fear seeking care in the future. I'll share an example from my own life because, as Ed mentioned, it's so important to tie the stories in with the data.
Yes.
So, you know, an experience in my own life is that my mom has pre-skin cancer, and I wanted to get a baseline screening for skin cancer. So I made an appointment at a dermatologist that was recommended by pretty much everyone that I could talk to in the Lehigh Valley as the number one dermatologist in this area. And the experience was so negative for me as an LGBTQ patient, from the restrictive intake forms, gender restrictive intake forms, to what I found to be a very problematic waiting room, to a debate on the television in the waiting room about gay rights while I was waiting for my appointment. You know, no doctor's office should have, for example, Fox News playing in the waiting room. It is a stressor for minoritized communities. So, and then the experience with the clinician himself was so bad that I didn't go back for the doctor recommended follow-up. And I'm a full-time queer health activist. This is what I do, and I know the importance of these screenings. A month later, I made an appointment with an LGBT-affirming dermatologist, but that dermatologist was an hour away. There wasn't another person anywhere in the Lehigh Valley that I could find who specialized in working with the LGBTQ community as a dermatologist. So I made a new appointment, but I have access to private transportation. I have the privilege to take time away from my job for a second medical appointment. I have all of those privileges in my life that allowed me to do that for myself, to make that second medical appointment an hour away. But not everybody has those privileges to be able to do that. So transportation can be a barrier, because here in the Lehigh Valley, even with you know, many, many great clinicians, there are still unmet healthcare needs that require driving a distance for a medical appointment, even in a place with 2 large health networks.
We're speaking with Edward Meehan of the Ryder Pool Foundation and Adrian Shanker of the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center. We'll be back right after these messages.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus Swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
For program support on WDIY, we thank the Pocono Cheesecake Factory, now offering curbside pickup of a variety of cheesecake, cookies, pastries, and gourmet treats. For 35 years, helping schools, clubs, and other nonprofit organizations throughout the Lehigh Valley and Northeast Pennsylvania achieve their fundraising goals, the Pocono Cheesecake Factory, since 1985, love at first bite. For more information, PoconoCheesecake.com.
Welcome back to Health Beat. We're speaking with Edward Meehan of the Ryder Poole Foundation and Adrian Shanker of the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center. Edward, Ryder Poole is a friend to the Bradbury Sullivan Community Center. What initiatives do you see that you're working on?
Let me just jump back to the early days of COVID and my compliments to Adrian and Bradbury Sullivan for the work they did in terms of providing good health information to the folks that they serve. That was really helpful, and I'm very glad that Poole Healthcare Trust, supporting with Lehigh Valley Health Network, was able to provide that help. I think reports like this needs assessment are valuable and help. I think Adrian's advocacy is important and it helps. I think having those kind of conversations are important. I think framing some of these conversations and these findings in a broader context to say, and this is why transportation is important as a social determinant, and this is why housing is important, safe and healthy housing is an important social determinant. I think we need keep at those conversations and explain why they're important and why they need to be addressed. I was struck, Adrian, with one of the findings in the report about how the respondents, by and large, were very willing, if possible, to participate in healthy living strategies and saying, yes, I would like to. I smoke. I know I shouldn't smoke. There's something I should do about it. So, I think those kind of dialogue, those kind of opportunities, I think are possible and necessary.
Adrian, we want to do the right thing. Tell us how to help.
Well, I just want to go back to what Ed just mentioned, because sure, it's so important that we mention the resiliency factors. So many times in conversations like this one, where we're talking about health challenges for minoritized populations, we sometimes forget to mention the resiliency factors. So I'm really glad that was brought up. Yeah, overwhelmingly, LGBTQ people have reported that they are interested in healthy eating strategies, active living strategies, quitting tobacco, taking those personal actions to improve their health. This is an opportunity for healthcare clinicians. It's also an opportunity for our broader community. But even with those resiliency factors, people are also saying that they don't know where to go for LGBT-affirming support in these areas. So more work is needed from clinicians and clinics to communicate that they're LGBT-welcoming, to be sure that they are LGBT-welcoming, and then to communicate it. And also from our entire community to share strategies to prevent chronic health conditions down the road, and to ensure that those strategies are targeted to populations most at need, including the LGBTQ community. So I really appreciate that the resiliency factors were brought up.
So it would be a good idea if you run a business, for example, and you're LGBTQ friendly, which we hope you are, that you might promote that on the window.
Yeah, so there are some really simple solutions that, for example, healthcare clinics, individual clinicians can do. So first, for any clinicians in the Lehigh Valley, most clinicians have to have a certain amount of continuing education annually, to take some of that continuing ed time to focus on improving care for the LGBT patient population. And there are some great strategies to do that through local and national CME or CE sources. For clinics, more broadly, to post patient non-discrimination policies more publicly, including in the clinic itself and, in the waiting room, to ensure that the intake forms that are used are fully inclusive for the LGBT community, not asking reductive questions that don't allow people to fully show up as themselves. To ensure that their waiting rooms have, even sometimes like super secret symbols, like putting a rainbow flag in the waiting room, or including a gay magazine on the stack of magazines in the waiting room. Those send symbols to patients that this is an affirming clinic. But more important than those symbols is the actual clinical care of the practice, to make sure that the clinicians are knowledgeable both of the cultural and the medical needs. Overwhelmingly, our needs assessment showed that the LGBT patient population in the Lehigh Valley and across Pennsylvania does not see clinicians as being culturally or medically competent on LGBT health. So much more work is needed to change that narrative and to make sure that patients feel comfortable talking to their doctors or their nurses or other healthcare providers about the healthcare challenges in their lives. We want people to go in for preventative screenings. We all have the same goal, that preventative screenings lead to early detection, which saves lives. That's everyone's goal, right? So if that's our goal, then the way to get there is to make patients feel comfortable.
Edward, how does Pennsylvania rank nationally, would you think?
With regard to what aspect?
Just how we're doing with the LGBTQ community, assisting, helping them identify, making the LGBTQ community feel comfortable.
It's a very big and very diverse state, so I'm not sure uniformly across the state of Pennsylvania you'll find different levels of acceptance and different levels of understanding of the findings of this report. So I'm not sure how we would match up otherwise. I would say that through the efforts of Bradbury Sullivan and similar organizations across the Commonwealth, that we're doing better and we're getting better, but I wouldn't be able to gauge relatively how we're doing compared to other states.
There's unfortunately a reason why we don't have that, though, which is that the CDC isn't requiring LGBT demographic data to be collected by every state in the primary annual survey that measures the general population's health, called the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. So some states collect LGBT data and other states don't. And we don't have a national effort to ensure that LGBT health data is collected, and we ought to.
Do you see progress on the horizon here with the different administration?
We're optimistic that the Biden administration will prioritize the collection of critical health data for the LGBT community and all minoritized communities. And we're optimistic that the nomination of Dr. Rachel Levine as Assistant Secretary of Health, as the person who would oversee most of the public health infrastructure for the country, including the Surgeon General's office, that we may see some progress there. But this progress also takes time, and it's not something that one or even two presidential terms can achieve on its own. Data takes many years to collect to get the longitudinal data that we would also need.
Greg, I see the opportunity for progress locally. Again, if we're focusing on social determinants of health, let's say in the Lehigh Valley, and we know that that the disparities in health are, uneven and scattered across disenfranchised and minority communities based on geography, race, ethnicity, education level, income level, gender, etc. The opportunity to get better data is important, and I think there's an opportunity to work with primary care providers who want to do the right thing, who want to be more helpful, who have an appreciation for this, but need a little help in understanding and having sensitivity to the various disenfranchised communities in terms of how to do a better job. So, for example, the study points out that smoking prevalence is at about 27% of the folks surveyed in this study, as compared to 17% of the general population. That 10% differential is kind of a big deal. And if you're a primary health care provider, you'd want to know about that, and you'd want to drill down a little bit better to say, okay, how do I think about helping a substantial number of people in the community that I serve? So at any rate, there's the national question, and I think there's what do we have in our capacity to do locally that could be helpful?
To be sure, I think most healthcare providers go into healthcare because they want to do the right thing. Right, overwhelmingly, most doctors, nurses, social workers, counselors, all types of healthcare workers are there to do the right thing, to support their patients and improve the health of their communities. So this is in no way an attack on healthcare providers or the clinics and health networks that they work for. These are structural issues, are long term issues, and I think Ed's right. We do see progress being made. We also see continued opportunity for more progress to be made. We can always continue to learn, and healthcare providers can always continue to learn and do better. And there's policy issues from insurance companies to the government that are barriers, but these things are changing over time. You were asking about mental health, and I wanted to point out that the 2020 Pennsylvania LGBT Health Needs Assessment confirmed that, seven in 10 LGBTQ Pennsylvanians say that they're experiencing a mental health challenge over the last year. And by the way, the data was collected at the very beginning of COVID, so not now a year into COVID, which is obviously important when we're talking about mental health. So 7 in 10 experience a mental health challenge, but only 3 in 10 were receiving counseling or other forms of mental health treatment. So I think that for us, when we're looking at mental health, we're not as concerned with the fact that so many people are experiencing mental health challenges. We're more concerned about the lack of treatment and counseling for those mental health challenges. We would like to see that gap reduced. We're also very concerned about the significant rates of thoughts of suicide and self-harm, and really wanting to ensure that we can do better as a community, as a society, to reduce instances of discrimination, bullying in schools, improve experiences with healthcare providers so that people feel better about themselves as well.
So we're all quarantined still, and we may know somebody who is in the community. What can we do to help alleviate the loneliness? And I would think that this is obvious, but then again, I know it's not.
I mean, people need community more than ever right now, and we also need to, as an entire region, keep each other safe from this dangerous virus. So, you know, Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center, as an example, is offering many virtual programs, including some that are opportunities for direct connection, so like on Zoom, for example, and others are live-streamed events that provide more of a cultural outlet. But there is opportunity to connect, and we will get through COVID together. There will be a time after COVID, and what's important is that we understand that there are safe ways to maintain community connectivity while also staying safe from this dangerous virus.
So tell our LGBTQ community how to be in contact with Bradbury Sullivan. I know many do, but how do I find community within Bradbury Sullivan?
So our website is bradburysullivancenter.org, and we're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and invite our community to connect with us in the way that's easiest for them. We offer 15 monthly support and community groups, all of which are online right now, as well as our youth program, which is hybrid online and in-person. So we do have many opportunities for our community to stay connected. And I should just add that for healthcare providers who are looking for opportunities to also improve the care that they're able to provide to the LGBTQ patient population, to really encourage continuing to learn through continuing education, and also to connect with us at Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center. We would love the opportunity to continue to talk with healthcare providers, improving the care for the LGBT patient population. I really appreciated the conversation today, and I believe that your listeners will really enjoy listening into it.
And Edward, we salute Ryder Poole for being a good friend to the LGBTQ community. You guys are doing some terrific work there.
Thank you, Greg.
You have been listening to HealthBeat on WDIY with Adrian Shanker of the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center and Edward Meehan from the Ryder Poole Foundation. Have a great evening.
Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to present HealthBeat, a spotlight on healthcare in the Lehigh Valley, produced in conjunction with the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation.